Hello, boys and girls. Welcome in to the Boys and Girl Podcast with Cowboys NFL Network reporter Jane Slater and NFL Network producer Bobby Belt. A Cowboys community with the inside scoop on the Dallas Cowboys. Now, coming straight to you from the Lone Star State, here's Jane and Bobby.
All right, Cowboys fans, it is week one, so we are back in regular season form, meaning you're going to hear from us twice a week, and we have got a jam-packed show. Not only do we welcome in Michael Gelkin, who is on the beat with Bobby and I, working for the Dallas Morning News, but we also have Randy Gregory's agent of record, Peter Schaefer, who's helping him get back in the league, and we don't get to answer all of the questions or tell the whole backstory, Bobby. But we do at least get some things answered, and even a surprising admission about what Randy Gregory has been doing in his downtime away from football.
Joining us now is Peter Schaefer. He is the president and founder of Authentic Athletics, and he is the agent for one recently instated Randy Gregory. You can follow him on Twitter at Peter J. Schaefer. Peter, how you doing?
Well, I'm here in Colorado, and it was 95 degrees yesterday. It's snowing. And so it's my understanding, because mostly people that are now populating the mountains, towns of Colorado from Texas, that this is something about their karma.
They brought it to you guys. Yeah,
they ruined our entire state. You know, you can't go up the mountains because of all these people from Texas. You can't rent cars because they've rented all the cars. They're not wearing masks. And now it's snowing in September.
Listen, I lived in Denver, and I worked at Channel 7 News there for 3 years, and I had Texas license plates for my first 2 years, and I've never dealt with more obnoxious drivers on the road that reacted so negatively just because of my Texas license plate. Like, it was very hostile for me to live there at times, Peter, so I know all about Denver.
They say out here you can always tell someone from Texas. You just can't tell them much.
So accurate.
That's what they say. There seems to be quite a rivalry. It's a shame that University of Colorado went to the Pac-12, because when Colorado, Texas, it was a rivalry built upon, you know, states and geography, and that's what rivalries are all about.
Well, and I'll tell you what, Texas would have beat Colorado in that Big 12 title game at Texas Stadium had Major Applewhite been allowed to start the game instead of have to come in the second half. So
fun fact, my ex-boyfriend was the quarterback at the time, Bobby Pesavento. Oh, wow. So I was always like, this, you know, kind of, it just didn't feel right dating him after all of that, because I was like, you sort of eliminated my team, man, and if you know, Colorado of all schools.
Bobby's a very nice guy.
That's so, great guy. But enough about my personal life. Let's talk about Randy's. That has been such a subject of fodder for so long. There's some stuff we can get into, Peter. I know there's some stuff we can't. But for people that didn't know what was going on behind the scenes, specifically with this latest chapter, what can you tell us that we weren't seeing out there about the links that Randy was trying to go through to get in the league and some of the pushback that he was getting?
Well, you know, it's always interesting to me that when someone gets suspended for, you know, alcohol or narcotics, or in this case, marijuana, that, you know, most companies, like if you're working for ESPN and you've got an addiction problem, they get you help and you get treatment, and, you know, you go to NA or AA at night, but you keep your job, you keep your personality, you keep your sort of I am who I am working, you feel like you're accomplishing something, providing for your family. The NFL says, okay, you're suspended, you can't go to the facility, can't earn a living, and you can't play the sport that you love. All while you're supposed to be dealing with these addiction problems. And usually addiction problems, and I'm not a doctor, a psychiatrist, but being an agent long enough, you get a few skins on the wall. Addiction comes from stress points in life, you know, anxiety coming from, are you successful, are you not successful, how are you perceived. And to take away people's financial wherewithal, building their living, and sort of, you know, mantra, you know, I'm a football player, and then still ask them to deal with addiction issues, that's tough now. And Randy had to do it all by himself, you know, since he signed me last summer 19, early in the summer. It was really just he and I dealing with these issues, and a local counselor named Dr. Dina Hadazi.
What I am curious for a lot of people that don't understand the uniqueness of Randy Gregory, and not to simplify it to this extent, but I think a lot of fans just think this is a guy that's got a pot problem and can't follow the rules. Can you clarify what is the struggle for Randy Gregory, and without giving too much away from patient client confidentiality, what are some of the stuff?
We've already gone into this. I live in Colorado, so what's a pot problem? In Colorado, a pot problem is when they're charging too much per ounce at the local dispensary where it's legal to buy. That's a pot problem out here. So, you know, I think that some of the issues, and I don't smoke marijuana. I've got two, you know, teenage kids, and when you have teenage kids in Colorado, you have to deal with this thing head on. You know, it's not something that you can put in the back drawer because it's there. It's in the schools. You drive to school, the logos, the green logos, you could buy marijuana as easy as you could buy beer in this state, maybe even easier. So you say a pot problem, like, you know, it's 30 years ago and they're putting people in jail for life for having, you know, ounce bags of weed. Here it's legal. It's part of the social fabric of our society out here in Colorado. And so I don't know if there is a pot problem, right? I think that people sometimes get used to it, just like, you know, you go home and have a glass of wine. Or, you know, Bobby, you have a glass of tequila, whatever, you know, your flavor of the night is. And so I don't know if it's a pot problem. The problem becomes when someone like the league says you can't do it and you still do it, okay? Because that is becomes a barrier to entry or the reason, you know, that they're requiring it. And the union, NFLPA, has allowed the league to suspend players as part of the collective bargaining process. I think that Randy's has never been, you know, I don't know if you can even be addicted to marijuana. I'm not that kind of doctor. I have a book here, I'll have to find it, on the whole testing process of marijuana. It's called You're in Trouble. One of the greatest titles of any book. You're in Trouble. It talks about, you know, marijuana testing. So I think that, but his issues really have been dealt with so that he's not smoking marijuana now, because that would keep him or preclude him from playing in the league. A lot of it came from a social anxiety situation he's had. Just because you're famous and a celebrity doesn't mean you're comfortable in public.
When you look at we saw Randy expressing before the reinstatement that he had a lot of frustration with the logistics and a lot of the hurdles that were seemingly in place for him to get back. I believe that was sometime in July that he had talked about that. What were some of those issues, and were they just, was there miscommunication there? Were there things you had to fight the league on? What was happening with that?
Well, without, you know, breaching confidentiality, you know, obviously there's a pandemic going on, and there were some logistics involved in drug testing that had to be ironed out to get so players can test. You know, when you have a drug test, whether it's for the, you know, every player does it at training camp, or during the offseason when testers come to a player person's house, normally, you know, they interact. Well, now you have a pandemic, and so what are the rules? How can you collect a sample of someone that's outside the bubble so that the tester doesn't bring the virus into the player, and or the player doesn't abnormally put the tester's health at risk? So those are some of the issues that took some time for the league and us and the union to work out so that everybody was safe. So there were a bunch of sort of unique circumstances surrounding not just Randy, but other players and the program and COVID.
What was this about Randy having a hard time getting a hold of the Players Association? In other words, looking for their backing. He was pretty public about his frustrations, and ultimately it looks like the two sides were able to talk at some point in order to get this approved by the league. Walk us through what was going on with that.
Well, you know, without going into too many details, ultimately, D. Murray Smith, the executive director of the union, and J.C. Treader, who's the president of the union, you know, stood up for Randy with Roger Goodell and Jeff Pasch and Todd Jones at the NFL and Kevin Manera. And we all got on sort of the same page. And I think that when the NFL saw that, you know, D and JC were behind Randy, and that's because of the great steps that Randy has made towards, you know, rehabilitating himself and getting to be in a good place in his life. And that I think that it that had a great effect on changing the NFL league office's perception and saying, okay, we should give this guy another chance.
There was an issue that had been reported after the 2018 season, after the suspension had occurred. There were these reports about the Cowboys were trying to, you know, sign Randy to some sort of an extension or do something to roll him some bonus money, and that never got clarified as to whether that was allowed or not. What's the exact status of Randy's contract right now? Is it, how much is left on that? I know some of it's told at some point, but how much is left on his contract? Is he restricted free agent at the end of that deal? Where does that stand right now?
We're working through the contract right now with Adam and Todd Williams at the Cowboys, and you know, that's not going to be an issue. He's going to be a Cowboy, hopefully, for his entire career.
Jerry hopes so. I mean, Jerry certainly has done his work to keep him in the building.
Well, you know, and at some point, you know, Jerry deserves to get every home field advantage because of the fact that he has, you know, stuck with. And I think that Jerry has a track record. You look what he's doing with Josh Price Brent. I mean, you know, he gets a very unfortunate situation, and Jerry hired him as a scout and gave him a chance. Now, because of Josh's work ethic and track record and all that stuff, he's earned the right to stay there. But Jerry, you know, he's very misunderstood. And I think that the people that know him, you know he's a great businessman and know he's always out for the Cowboys. But, gosh, he is pretty loyal to his players. And if he puts his arm around you, that's it. You better live up to him putting his arm around it, because he's going to take care of you if you take care of him.
Well, and as he also cautioned reporters about Ezekiel Elliott, he's earned the right, correct? But we have certainly seen that. What I wanted to ask you, too, is I did love seeing Josh Brent being referenced in Randy Gregory's process. What did Josh Brent have to do? And if a lot of people don't recall, some of the fans, Josh Brent, of course, involved in the DUI that led to the death of his teammate. His teammate's mother wished for the Cowboys to support him and help him rehabilitate his life despite it all. And to your point, it looks like he's done a very solid job. He had one setback 2 years ago at a Wendy's. But with that being said, you know, I think it's been a positive influence having the Cowboys around him. How has he been a positive influence for Randy?
Josh is an outstanding person. He definitely made a tragic mistake, and he's more than paid for it, and he will probably pay for it for the rest of his life. But I think surrounding Randy with people like that is what's putting Randy in a really good place. He just can't be surrounding himself with me. You know, nobody would want to talk to me every day, and certainly nobody would want me to be their psychologist or counselor. That's not going to end well. I'm not that type of warm and fuzzy kind of guy that you want to be, you know, giving all your problems to. But, you know, like his counselor, Dr. Hadazi, still doing a wonderful job. Josh, I just think that surround yourself with good people. The more good people you surround yourself with, the better chance you have to succeed, whether you have problems going in or not. You know, a lot of these young men go into this league with, you know, their eyes wide open, and they get, like, you know, we talked about earlier, they get hit by a 2x4. All different directions. So when you surround yourself with good people, you increase your odds of succeeding.
What is it that Randy, I think there's some confusion over this. Everybody knows that there's going to reach a
point. How come he's the only one wearing a headset?
I know. It's
look, I've got the fancy setup here, man.
She's NFL Network there. She's got the lav mic and piece. And
it's like I got a home cam just like our insider boys.
Exactly. Oh, really? Yeah, so she's big time. That's it. She's just one of these one percenters.
And whatever. So, I set up my home cam. Mine,
headset.
Mine is a home cam on a budget. But yes, that's why he's got the fan. He's the radio guy. I'm the TV girl. So we're kind of representing the two genres here.
I'm just wondering why. You know, I got the short end of the technology.
Well, Peter, you've got a good lighting in there. This is better than some of the lighting that we've had with our guest.
Well, this is all natural lighting here in Colorado.
It's the reflection from the snow, the piles of snow. It's just beaming some white in there.
It's coming out the window. I can see it now. It's crazy. September 8th.
So I think everybody has seen that Randy's allowed to return to practice. I think it's October 5th. He's allowed to play again week 7. What is it he's allowed to do right now? And what limitations are there in his involvement with the team right now?
And to piggyback off that, Peter, because the one thing that's been coming up is why this arbitrary date of week seven is when he can rejoin the team. Can you explain the acclimation process too?
Well, I can't explain the rationale for the dates, but I can't, you know, that's up the, you know, the wizard. But right now, you know, the key is for him to get in shape. He's in good shape, but like getting football shape, learn a new system, get with the coaches, you know, understand the whole COVID system, you know, and be ready to go for that sixth game. And that's the plan. I mean, I know he was at the facility today. They got him working out every day. He's in meetings. And he's doing whatever, you know, the league is allowing him to do. And he's monitoring very carefully. You know, whenever you're playing for Coach Tom Sula, you know, social distancing was always in play with him. Because, I mean, he's sweating and spitting anyway. I mean, nobody wanted to get within 6 feet of him before COVID. So
it's so funny you say that, because I 1,000% noticed that the other day through my binoculars, because they keep us so far away, Peter. And of course, the fans aren't getting to see much with some of these tight shots, but that is something fun to watch. Okay, so he is allowed in the building. He's able to lift. He's in the meeting rooms. He's just not allowed to play right now. Got it.
So practice and playing, that is literally the only limitations he has. And otherwise, he doesn't take part in anything else.
Right. I mean, if you think about it, part of it has to do with sort of what the union talked about, the 14 days before they can put pads on. You know, those are talking about players that haven't played for 8 months. Randy hasn't played for 18 months. So, you know, we're just trying to monitor it, make sure that when he comes back, you know, when you go in the NFL, people like to say you go from 0 to 100. I like to say you go from 0 to Indy 500. You're going, forget about 100, you're going 0 to 220 right away. When you've got to go against guys like Tyron Smith, 330 pounds, and he's trying to, you know, put you on your rear end, you better be in shape, you better be ready to go, because you're going to be pretty sore the next day. You know, it's funny because I play lacrosse, even and my son plays lacrosse.
I see the stick.
That's the Twitter profile. Yeah, he's in full game mode on his Twitter profile, too.
But we hadn't played because of COVID for 8 months, even as in the men's leagues. And our national tournaments were canceled. And I went out and played in July, the first game, and I was in pretty good shape from, you know, working out and running every day. But I'll tell you something. That first game, I came home at noon after playing. I couldn't get off the couch. It was just, you know, playing games. And that's just men's league. Forget about what do you think in the NFL. And we're going to see it this Sunday, I think, in the games. You better have players on pitch counts. And these players are going to be – they're going to be wiped out after. They have not played at that intensity level in 9 months. And you can't replicate it in camp, and you can't replicate it in practice. This thing is going to be – it's going to be interesting. And I guarantee you there's going to be some tremendous comebacks this weekend, because teams are going to – they're going to run out of gas a lot faster than they normally did. You might be up by 21 going to the fourth quarter, and then – coaches are going to try to put their foot on the pedal, and there ain't going to be no gas left.
Now, I know when the first time he came back, a lot of people were skeptical that he wasn't going to be in playing shape, and he had a pretty dynamic start coming back. I mean, Bobby, you're the stats guy. It was a good comeback, was it not?
Yeah, I mean, he the last half of the season, he generated more sacks and quarterback hits than DeMarcus Lawrence did for the team.
There you go.
He definitely hit his stride quickly.
And so, but what we had heard was before he came back that time around, he had been working, had a job. And so I'm curious, what has he been doing to make money? Because I think the misconception is that these guys, they enter the league and, you know, their bank accounts are flush with cash. His is obviously because of the stop start and, you know, because of some of the fees that come along with some of this, he's not cash flush. And then, you know, we have a guy like Alden Smith who was working out, you know, at Unbreakable Performance with Jay Glazer and then Brandon Tucker here in Dallas. What has he been doing away from the field, Peter?
Well, Randy's had a son was born last thing, October. He's been working some jobs, worked at Amazon in a distribution center, and he's been working out religiously every day. And it's the hardest thing in the world to work out every day on your own to prepare to play in the NFL. And so, like I said, it's tough to go from 24-hour fitness to the star overnight. So there'll be a little acclimation period, but he's ready to go, and he's excited. I think he's in a great place. I'm excited for when you guys get to interview him and see, you'll see a totally different person.
And we were going to have him today, but of course the Cowboys want to have the PR splash, and I'm cool with that. But I got to ask you, when you guys got the green light, because I know you guys were getting frustrated there a couple weeks ago. How did it make Randy feel, and how did it make you feel to know that you've been there with him this last year, trying to get this thing going for him, knowing here's a guy that's been working at Amazon. He's been working out at the 24-hour fitness. He just wants another chance.
You know, I think there is a sense of satisfaction that you're able to help someone achieve a dream and get back to where they were. And those are the phone calls, you know, that as an agent that you enjoy making. There are two types. You also get the phone call, hey, you got to tell your player he's been released, or you know, that type of deal. You know, you get the phone call in the draft, you're about to be drafted by the Cowboys, you're about to be whatever. You know, that's those are great calls. And so getting the letter on the email Friday, and, you know, first of all, when you get the letter, the NFL always sends the letter as an attachment. So it's sort of like now you have to unwrap the present or the bow, and it could be either the thumbs up or the thumbs down letter. So you're like, all right, I got the letter. Now I got to open it up. And you never know what it says until you open it up. And this one, you know, was a positive letter. And you're like, all right, I now get to call Randy and, you know, tell him. And after having talked to him, you know, 1, 2, 3 times a day for the last year, he wasn't expecting the letter to have come. There's no, you know, you don't get a letter, you don't get a text saying, okay, the letter's coming on Friday. You know, sometimes you think it's coming on Monday, it doesn't come for 2 weeks. So the letter came, and I'm like, I read it. I'm like, all right, you know, I'm going to call Randy. And then so we decided, you know, he was excited, and, you know, you could hear him whooping and hollering in the background. And, you know, that's always a joy to hear, and that's satisfaction. And then we decided that we're, you know, sort of going to tease it a little. And so he was going to put a picture of him in a cowboy, you know, him playing with the Cowboys, and just put that up on Twitter and let that tease. And then all next thing you know, someone must have leaked it, because we started getting calls from media all over. And, but the idea was sort of
teasing. We're sorry for harassing you, Peter.
Yes, you didn't have the exclusivity on that. I was not monogamous on Friday.
So, Peter, I got to ask, because I know some people who watch it are going to say, hey, wait, we left off that question there. But I'm curious, because you did reference there that when I asked about where his contract situation is right now, you said that you're working through things right now with Todd Williams, Adam Pacifica, the Cowboys salary cap guy. Is that to get a handle on what exactly his contract status is, or are you saying that there's talks or some sort of negotiations to try and potentially extend him?
Well, there's a lot of moving parts to a player that's still on his rookie deal and is set in what tantamount to his seventh season. So we're working through all that now. He only has 2 credited seasons. So he wouldn't even be he would be a restricted free agent if he played this year and next year. So there are a lot of moving parts, but we're working through that right now.
You know, we've only talked about probably 2% of this whole story and the saga. Do you anticipate that one day Randy's going to tell the whole story?
I hope so. I hope so, because I think that it'll give people a greater perspective on what he went through. I think it also could be beneficial to a lot of younger players and students, male and female, that are going through similar anxiety issues and how to deal with them and what to do and what not to do. And, you know, and maybe people around him to realize that he might be masking something and he's crying out for help. And if we can help save some other people, you know, from these situations, then we've all done ourselves a service.
You know, before we let you go, Ron Slavin,
Let me go. I could just hit this button.
You could do this for hours.
I'm gone.
He's like, bye. Now you guys see what we deal with some of these agents, for those watching on YouTube, guys like this guy. So I wanted to ask you, with Alden Smith, we had Ron Slavin on a couple of weeks ago after his reinstatement, and he talked about being personally invested in making sure that, you know, everything, he stays on the level, that the, you know, the alcohol is not an issue, and he is heavily involved in his life, and there is a structure in place to make sure that
Ron's drinking the alcohol for Alden now?
It wouldn't shock me, quite frankly.
No, he's a good man.
But in all seriousness, what are some of the mechanics in place to make sure that there's some structure for Randy as well? Because I got to imagine that we're on the last leg here as it relates to the comeback story that is Randy Gregory. As one coach told me, once you get out of the league, it's really hard to get back in. Do you kind of feel like this is his last go?
I don't think like that in any part of my life. We've been through a lot up here, and we just try to stay positive and think about what we can do moving forward. So I don't look at it like anything's a last. What was the expression? As long as there's time on the clock, you still have a chance to win. So I never look at it like that. I think we have Randy. It starts with Randy. And if nobody's going to succeed in treatment or succeed in changing their lives or their patterns unless they want to. And I think he definitely wants to. I think he's demonstrated that. And so that's where it all starts. And then to put pieces in place around him. He's got a family. His parents have moved down to Dallas. They've got jobs down there. They've been great. You know, putting him around with Josh Price and other mentors in the building. Brian Wamsley and Will McClay, those guys, and then, being around his teammates, like I said, Dr. Dazzi's fantastic, and I guess when he runs out of people to call, he picks one up and calls me.
Or Bobby.
Wow. Or Bobby, maybe it's a coin toss. Who knows?
But I guess my question is, so he is still meeting with his psychiatrist and will there be frequent
counselor.
How does the drug testing work right now since they've sort of decriminalized it too?
Did you just go with the air quotes?
I did. Because it didn't criminalize it, but that's what I'm gonna say here. Decriminalized it.
Well, I think what you have is the new policy started with new collective bargaining agreement. And I wouldn't say it's decriminalized, because it's never was criminalized. The NFL couldn't put you in jail, but it has changed the threshold levels for positive tests. It's changed the possible punishment from suspensions to fines. So there's that involved. That's part of the stuff that we're working through too with the league right now. It's not as simple as, ABC or, 1, 2, 3, buckle my shoe, that type of stuff. There's definitely a lot in it. There's a lot in it for all of them. And for all the players similarly situated. And one thing is, too, now, you send a guy to the Cowboys with these problems, they're going to give him every possible resource to succeed also. If he's got to see a counselor, there's no, that's a problem. No, let him see a counselor. The Cowboys and Jerry, they get a lot of grief, but they definitely support their players, not just financially, but emotionally, in every possible way they can.
Well, Peter, I appreciate your time. I know that you've been exceedingly busy lately. I'm sorry that Tom Pelissero and I drove you nuts during all of this, but I'm glad that there was some good news to report. And I know Bobby and I both are really rooting for Randy.
What was that?
It wasn't Tom that was driving me nuts. I don't know why he would get thrown on the bus. I think that was. That was deflecting someone else's issues.
You're the best, Peter. Thank you so much for jumping on the show.
I appreciate being on your show, Bobby. And Dan, and anytime you want, just give me a holler.
Joining us now is Michael Gelkin. Michael writes for the Dallas Morning News. You can follow him on Twitter @GelkinNFL. Michael, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. How y'all doing?
Doing great. So, everybody's got the niche on the beat. Right. So you've got John Machota as Mr. iPhone videos. And it's always David Moore is first question at every press conference. And then now 2 years in a row, we've established that Michael Gelkin is Mr. Cut Down Day and is going to have all the Cut Down Day details. So
I just don't have the energy to keep up with all of these obscure guys. So credit to you, Gelkin.
it's a lot to go through, but looking at the Cut Down Day, what, I guess, surprised you the most and what takeaways do you think you had from, obviously not the initial 53 when they were doing some, logistical maneuvering there, but what are your overall takeaways of the roster they ended up with?
Surprises, I would say, of all the undrafted rookies who were waived, Francis Bernard was probably the biggest surprise. But even to constitute a surprise, you somewhat kick yourself, because I remember, you know, you see a certain flash moments during training camp, and you ask Mike McCarthy about Bernard, and he speaks so highly about him. And you start to think, okay, this young guy from Utah, he's got a real chance of making this 53. And then, you see the moments that maybe aren't quite as sharp, and then you ask him, you know, a couple of days before cutdown day, you know, what kind of work are you seeing on special teams? And he says he's on punt return, he's on kickoff return. Okay, but what string are you in? I'm on second string. Well, if you're an undrafted rookie linebacker trying to make this 53-man roster, you shouldn't be on second string special teams. That kind of should tell him something and really tell us something. So probably more surprised than I felt I should have been. Once you kind of piece everything together. But yeah, not a ton of surprises. I thought if anything, this Cowboys roster reduction really showed how savvy I think this front office is, when rather than having to, you know, waive a young player, like maybe a Sean McCune, you know, tight end out of Michigan, who they really like as a fourth tight end. You know, if you waive him, you risk losing him to another team. You risk losing him on waiver. So you keep a guy like that and then release Justin March, and they release, you know, these veterans, Joe Thomas, CJ Goodwin, with these little kind of silent little agreements. It's not silent. They talk about beforehand, like, hey, we're going to cut you. You're a vested veteran. You're not going to go on waivers. We're not going to lose you. You hang tight. Don't leave town. We're cutting you on Saturday. You'll be back on the roster by Monday morning. You'll be back on the roster on Sunday. So I just thought they did a really nice job navigating everything that comes with roster reductions and all the rules associated with waivers. So those are some of my bigger takeaways.
How about Lyle Collins? We kept being told there's nothing going on with him, right? And yeah, we're told it's an in-shape issue. And then now he's got an injury. Like, what are you hearing about him? I did think that was interesting that now all of a sudden he's IR.
Yeah, well, he's certainly injured right now. I think one of the points of confusion early on is that we heard there's multiple things going on with Lyle, and there was some conditioning aspects to the situation where they felt like, you know, not saying it's the only thing going on with Lyle, but conditioning was part of it. And there wasn't any details about anything beyond that. And so it's certainly an opportunity to kind of point us to, you know, an injury there. And it's a hip issue that will keep him out for at least the first 3 weeks of the season, which is unfortunate, not only for Lyle, but obviously the Cowboys. I mean, what a dominant season that was for him last year, coming off the big contract. So we all know what Lyle Collins can do when healthy. It's a huge loss to go from him to anyone else in terms of drop-off. But we'll see what Cam Irving can bring on Sunday night against the Rams.
And staying with that line, we talked to Mike McCarthy about this in one of our press conferences about Sean Lee. I mean, he hasn't gotten hardly any interaction with him, certainly not on the football field. Obviously, he's been able to watch him from afar. He even went so far as to say he was a fan of him when he was in high school. Are you surprised the Cowboys continue to stick it out with Sean Lee? I think if you cover this team and you cover Sean, it's not that big of a stretch. But to the fans might wonder why they continue holding on to him, who just, after he was healthy last year, what a bummer for this guy to once again have a camp where he's injured.
Yeah, well, I think the game has changed so much over the past several years where, you know, look at the Rams, for example. They're going to be in 11 personnel, one running back, one tight end, three wide receivers for, I would say, expectation would be almost three-quarters of this game. And so you're not going to be in your base defense, which means you're not going to have Sean Lee, if healthy, even on the field. It's going to be Jalen Smith, and it's going to be Leighton Vander Esch. And so with the way that the game has changed, you know, having that third linebacker, ideally, it would be someone who plays a lot more special teams than Sean Lee provides. And so that's not to dismiss that point. But, you know, overall, you know, he's a guy who we've seen, I think it was against the Rams last year, where he had an incredible game. He can step in with you. He's great. He can step in when you need him to. He's shown when he's healthy. He's great in your room. He's essentially like a coach, and he's been phenomenal for those young guys. I mean, some of the young guys in the defense are willing to learn from him, and they do. Other ones, you know, over the course of time, as they maybe develop more and mature more, they kind of see the value of what it's like to have a guy like Sean Lee in your locker room. I think they're asking him to do. I think overall he brings a lot to the organization. That's not to say he's not without his shortfalls, again, special teams being among them, but I think the team could do a lot worse for its third linebacker, who won't see the field unless the team's in, you know, base or heavy personnel.
I'm just wondering when they're going to make him sort of a Kellen Moore in the building, right? Like, at some point, are we going to see that from Sean Lee? But to your point, I think, especially after seeing him play last year, it was one of his better years. Mm-hmm. It is a little bit hard to sever ties with him, even with it being a new coaching staff. Sorry, Bobby, just wanted to just chime in there real quick.
It's and continuing on that line of thinking, I guess, in terms of like how valuable he is, particularly as a locker room presence, which is something you just mentioned there. I think that last year, a lot of us were in agreement that, and I know this was your first year on the Cowboys beat, but a lot of us were in agreement that that was one of the best Cowboys rosters from a talent perspective that we had seen in a long time. And there was no doubt the amount of talent that they had. They were in the games that they were winning, they were beating teams down oftentimes. I think everybody in the end kind of looked at it and said there were potentially some chemistry issues or some leadership issues that were really at play there that kind of explain why such a talented team went 8-8. How much do you think that is the biggest question, I guess, for them heading into this season, is the chemistry and the leadership questions rather than the talent questions?
Well, I don't think talent anymore is the question. Honestly, I think last year, I mean, everything I heard upon arrival on the beat was just how talented the Cowboys were, but I think that might not have been totally true. I think they were not talented enough on special teams, for example. I mean, they were abysmal there. They just were really, really shorthanded in some key areas, and they showed up again and again. And you know, that New England game comes to mind where you have an organization, the Patriots, that just invests so much on special teams. They have so many guys who do almost nothing else on that roster except special teams. They specialize as specialists. And the Cowboys went up in a really yucky weather type of a game, and the only touchdown, I believe, that was scored that game was off of a – was it a block punt or something along the lines? It was this total special teams breakdown, and that was the difference with their all-pro, you know, guy coming in and blocking it. So I don't know, I feel like the talent of the roster construction overall over the course of the year proved itself not to be what was hoped. I do think the talent is better this year. I think the offense is at another level with the depth that the receiving corps provides. I think Tony Pollard being another year, them trying to figure out ways to use him and Zeke in unison, I think it's going to be really fun to see how creative they get there. The tight end group with Blake Jarwin, you know, he adds a different dynamic from an athleticism standpoint. So not to overlook questions on the offensive line, was certainly Travis Frederick's loss, even if you're a Joe Looney fan, which I think you have reason to be. You know, this is still nonetheless a huge loss from what he brings from a mental standpoint to that unit. But defensively, I think they're going to be able to get after the quarterback a lot more effectively, even with questions about Alden Smith and what we're getting here in 2020 after the long layoff. Everson Griffin, as a rotational guy, this is what he is right now. They should really wreak havoc. So talent, I think, is better this year. I don't have questions there. Maturity, I think is better too. I think there was a bit of identity crisis last year where, you know, I don't want to single anyone out, and so I won't. But I think when you look at, you know, there were times last season where 12 men are on the field and as a defense, and they don't call a timeout. And a part of me was that they had 10 men on the field. They remain short on defense. They don't call a timeout, and then they give them a huge screenplay against the Vikings, I believe. Yep. And then it was, you know, Jalen Smith, week 16, a critical game against the Eagles. He, as a Mike linebacker, is relaying all the play calls to his teammates, and, you know, it was supposed to be a man or a zone. Instead, he tells, you know, he mixes it up to teammate Malcolm Smith, and it's a huge play and the biggest game of the year. I just don't think the leadership, again, which isn't dependent all on one player, but I just think overall the leadership was really organic. It seemed forced. You know, Michael Bennett shows up in a midseason trade, and he's the loudest guy in your locker room. There just seemed to be times where it just didn't feel like a playoff caliber team. And golly, they had every opportunity to be a playoff caliber team in such a weak division. And the fact that they squandered it, I think, tells you about a bit about their talent. And I think it tells you about their chemistry as well. I have higher hopes this year based on, you know, Leighton Vander Esch being the Mike linebacker, and Jalen is just such a more natural will. I mean, he had an incredible training camp. I mean, he's probably, I mean, if you're asking me after the first week of training camp, That's the best week of practice I've seen from an off-ball linebacker in my career. And he was just so disruptive in the passing game and just all over the field. He was just sideline to sideline, truly. So long answer to a good question, Bobby. But I think the talent and the chemistry, for me, having been around it now for – this is year two and having something of a frame of reference, I think both arrows are pointing in the right direction.
Your impressions of camp so far, because I have covered this team for – I mean, I think this will be my seventh year. Ninth year. And there's been a couple of coaches here while I've been covering this beat. What has stood out to me was, one, no music in practice, save for the water breaks. But we're not seeing Mike McCarthy doing jumping jacks with the team. It just doesn't seem like there's sort of this – I always felt they were putting on a show with the stretching exercises. And it's not to – this is not a slap in the face of Jason Garrett. But even just the way they get to work, I mean, it is so intentional to me. It is fundamentally sound to me. And then we keep talking about taking the ball away. I mean, that applies even to offense, not getting the ball taken away from offensive players. What's been your impression of just camp observations under this new regime?
I think it's been interesting to see the way that Mike McCarthy manages a practice, which is that if the quarterbacks are doing something, he's not necessarily right there. He might be off to the side talking to Will McClay, talking to Stephen Jones, talking to Jerry Jones, talking to, you know, just some of the brain trust that the Cowboys have. And just taking that CEO approach to being a football coach, he's very hands-off. I didn't necessarily know what to expect one way or the other, but, you know, that's a little unlike what I've seen in the past. So I think that's probably one of the biggest takeaways from a pure big picture standpoint. I mean, we're going more micro. I mean, that's probably the worst offensive tackle play I've seen. I mean, it was ridiculous watching, you know, Wyatt Miller try to stop DeMarcus Lawrence every day. I mean, great experience for Wyatt, who's no longer with the team, be it 53-man roster or practice squad. But yeah, I think maybe he might be on IR with a minor injury. But I think that was really eye-catching with this camp. I mean, I was really eager to evaluate Alden Smith and, you know, Bradley and Nye and, you know, some of those edge guys. But I thought it was really difficult because Anai was highly disruptive, but he was what he should be when going up against, you know, a guy from Mexico who's playing American football, professional football for the first time and is going to be part of the international player pathway program. I mean, you know, how much do you read into Anai's dominance when that's kind of the level of competition, which is not at all a slight to that offensive tackle, but it's just being realist with where those offensive tackles experience level at this camp.
And I also thought, I don't know if this was Mike McCarthy being sneaky or more to the substitution that he likes, the flexibility, the diversity he likes with some of his position groups. I never got a really good feel for who was with the ones, who were with the twos. For me, it was hard to track practice because I felt like he was mixing it up so much. Am I missing out on something? Did you see something different?
No, there was a lot of fluidity, I would agree. I wonder how much of that was some of the stuff that you would do in the spring and during
the I don't have a handle on. So that's why I was kind of curious. Is that going to obviously be different when we can't watch 3 hours of practice? We're only going to get to watch 30 minutes this
week. Yeah, I've no doubt that, especially now that we're in game week, you know, the ones we work with, the twos, and the threes will barely see the field. They'll just be given ones and maybe even twos a look, mostly the ones. I think the secondary was probably the most fluid position group that we saw. And some of that is just because they really want to cross train these guys. And so we saw, you know, Darryl Worley, who's played a little bit of safety in this league, see a good amount of reps. You know, they moved Reggie Robinson from corner to safety. You know, they talked about doing something similar with Cheeto, but then he got hurt. And so I think that limited their, you know, them doing so. I wonder if some of that is just maybe COVID reasons where you just don't know when you're going to lose a guy, but I think it might just be coming down to basic principles of how this coaching staff wants their secondary to operate, where you hear about your offensive line, you want to cross train it so that if you lose your, you know, one of your five, that guy that steps in, you'll still have your best five offensive linemen on the field. They almost seem to be taking that sort of same offensive line approach with their secondary. Or if we're in our base defense and we're going to have our four defensive backs on the field, we want our best four DBs to be on the field, or nickel, our best five, and dime, our best six. And so there's all this mixed in and matching, I think, that might be true to that theory, that philosophy.
You know, we talk about the differences, some of the stark differences, I guess, that have come when we look at training camp going from Jason Garrett to Mike McCarthy. One thing that seems to have been held over from Jason Garrett to Mike McCarthy is just complete muddiness and a lack of clarity about Amari Cooper's health, since neither one of them ever seemed to want to give us a straight answer about whether or not he was healthy when it seemed pretty obvious that he was hurt. He, in fact, we'll play a clip real quick of his answer last week when Calvin Watkins and Clarence Hill asked him about it.
How you guys have handled the thought process of how you've handled Amari Cooper's snaps in practice the last two or three days?
Well, I mean, it's just like any player. I mean, there's mathematical information that goes into, you know, where we think they are individually. You know, what we're trying to accomplish as a, you know, as a position. You know, what conceptually the things that he's done with the quarterbacks, particularly Dak. So, I mean, all those things go into account. The wear and tear on each player is factored into that. I mean, it's, you know, Amari is the most experienced receiver of our group, so I mean that's part of the equation. So I mean, it's, you know, there's a reason why coaches work the hours, and the support staff work the hours that they do, and so it's all done for a reason.
So there's no injury there, no injury going on with him at all, or worry about an injury.
I mean, it's training camp. You know, everybody has, you know, a little bit of something. So I just think it's, you know, once again, where every player is, Amari, you know, all the guys. So I mean, it's a part of really why, you know, today with the weather and, you know, not wanting to practice on turf, you know, consecutively like we have been. We have the new field now, so these are all you know, examples of why you formulate a plan and you have the ability to adjust it. So yeah, it's. I feel very good about where Amari is, but, you know, if he needs to take less reps, or, you know, once again, these are all things that are communicated between the strength coach, the trainer, the position coach. So it's, a lot goes into this.
Okay, so looking at that answer that he gives to is Amari Cooper healthy, it seems like a pretty straightforward question that didn't get much of a straightforward answer. Where do you think Amari Cooper is health-wise, and why do you think it is we're going on about a year now of just – unclear answers from the Cowboys as a whole about where Amari Cooper is with his health?
Yeah, it's a great question. My read on the situation is kind of developed, I think, with it. When McCarthy starts talking about, you know, math and, you know, he's kind of vague explanation as to what the situation was, I was thinking, well, let's see. Every NFL team has these trackers in their shoulder pads that tells them how much a player is moving and how many miles he's traveling and all those sorts of measurables. So maybe they're trying to keep Amari fresh for the season because, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, wear on that tire over the course of camp. They're trying to keep him fresh. And then he keeps missing practice. And then he's working with the trainer to the side with the resistance cords. And it's very clear that Amari Cooper has some measure of an injury.
And Michael, he's not that much older than Michael Gallup. And we didn't see a ton of Amari Cooper at times last year. So I'm sitting there going wear and tear on the tires. I'm a little confused on that one. Michael right. Thomas isn't getting limited in New Orleans.
Yeah. I think one of the things that Amari needs to show this season, he signed a huge contract that essentially is a two-year deal, though, when you really look at the way that it's structured, where it's 2020, it's 2021, and then 2022, the Cowboys have a decision to make, not only with Amari Cooper, because they can get out of his deal with minimal, negligible amount of dead money, but they also have Michael Gallup and his contract expiring that same offseason. So that's kind of where we're all pointing to, is that we have these three wide receivers that on paper are fantastic. They want to get 1,000 yards, each of them together this season. And they very well could if it's a 16-game year. But Amari has to show something still. You know, by nature of his contract, by nature of the time that he spent in this league, he should be the most established of the wide receivers. He should be the one with the fewest number of question marks associated with him. I've covered Amari, who I respect the heck out of as a person and as a player too. I've covered him now with the Cowboys going into year two, but I also covered him some with the Raiders. And there is a commonality to what I've been able to see, which is that it's difficult sometimes to explain what's going on with Amari Cooper. He's been one of the more perplexing players that I've covered, because there are games where he just terrorizes a secondary. He is a game wrecker. He can, at any point in the season, he's capable of going off for 200 yards. He's shown that. But there are the stretches that come between where you scratch your head and wonder, you know, what happened to the other Amari Cooper? And the best explanation that has been provided to me along the way of, you know, asking questions about what's going on is that, you know, I'm trying to be careful because I want to, you know,
diplomatic, sure. Carefully.
But yeah, there were games last season where third down, a critical third down or critical fourth down, and you know, you want your best players on the field. I mean, it's like backyard football. You know, if the game's on the line, you know, you want the tallest kid down the street on the corner to be on the field and just run up and go get it. And you know, you want to turn to your best.
Cowboys Eagles on the road, Michael.
Yeah, and Amari's not on the field. He's on the sideline, and we asked him about it afterward, and he said that he was pulled. I think he said from the game, like, you know, there was part of the rotation. And he was asked, and I thought this is probably the best, most timely question I've ever seen be posed to Amari. Well, shouldn't you say, no, I'm staying on that field, like refuse to be pulled off that field? And there are guys I've covered, you know, like Keenan Allen from the Chargers, he's got a dog mentality about him, which is one of the best qualities that you can say a player has. He's just got a dog mentality. I think wide receivers, some guys have a dog mentality where they are going to scrap, they're going to fight, they're just going to, if it's a critical third down and they're lining up in the slot going against the best nickel corner in the league and it's an inside, you know, slant and the guy's got inside leverage, he's still going to find a way to get to his spot so that the quarterback can hit him and they can convert and keep the chains going and stay on the field. That's a dog mentality. I think one thing that we need to watch this season, and one thing I think the Cowboys surely are watching over the next 2 years before their decision, is the dog there? Like, does he have that dog mentality? Because I think CD's a dog. I'm pretty sure Michael Gallup's a dog based on what we've seen. And
Gallup's a dog in a different way, don't you think, Galkin? Like, it's not obvious.
I don't agree a dog he is, but I'm saying he's a dog.
Right, but what I'm saying about him is people don't see, like, this the characteristic we typically see in what you're alluding to with the wide receiver, like Michael Irvin is what you think of when you think of a brash, confident wide receiver in Dallas. With Gallup, he just really wants to succeed. He's like the kid that wants the gold ribbon at the end of the game. Like, he wants the pat on the head. He wants to get better. He wants to be involved. I think that's the thing that's always sort of stood out to me about Gallup. Whereas with Amari, it's like there's like this analytical, like almost like he, like devoid of emotion. It's fascinating. He's like the anti-wide receiver.
Right. I think we always talk about how he plays chess in the locker room. He's very analytical, and that applies to the game. His personality there, kind of somewhat, he approaches his routes and all that. There comes a time where you just need to flip over the chessboard and just, you know, change the game. And I think that's what Amari – it's something that people want to see from him. It's just, I don't think he's very well injured right now. And I'm not saying that that's what's happening in practice, why he's missing practice. And we'll see on the injury report this week, what he's got, what the ailment is and everything like that. But I think overall, more broadly, that's probably, I think, the fairest criticism of Amari that you can make. And we'll see how that shows itself to be. I think he's got lots to show still, and he's got, I mean, there's no reason that this guy, you know, shouldn't post more yards than he already does. He's that talented. He's that good. He's that skilled. He's that nuanced and that fine-tuned in his route running, and he's sensational in so many things that he does. But I think it's in within him to take his game to even another level, and we'll see whether or not he can do that this year. And maybe helps having such a crowded wide receiver chart where he doesn't need to be that quote unquote one every single week. That ball, there's only one of it, and so Dak's going to spread it around, and we'll see how it all shakes out.
I think it's interesting you referencing that Philly game, and when he came out of when he was at practice the next week and he got asked about it, and he said, well, that's rotation, I got pulled, that's not up to me. And we asked questions around the building that week, and it was, said that Sanjay Law was in charge of the rotation, and there were times where it seemed like they butted heads sometimes. How much of the issues do you think we saw? Do you think there were issues, is basically what I'm saying, between that chemistry between Sanjay Law and Amari Cooper that maybe explain away some of the issues we saw in the second half of last year?
I would be unqualified to really speak on it. I would have to do some more legwork there to say. I mean, the Cowboys chose not to bring Sanjay Law back, but I don't know if that's necessarily an indictment that I'd be willing to attach to that answer. I just don't know. I would be speaking out of turn. I think it's a fair question, but I wouldn't be positioned to answer it.
To answer your question, Bobby, I've asked that very question. I never got the sense that there was problems between the two. I do think that Amari asks a lot of questions and wants answers to those questions. And I think sometimes when you try to provide those answers and they aren't enough, I think it can lead to frustration. But I never got the sense that it was these two didn't get along and this is why that didn't work. I mean, we saw the departure of Gary Brown and there were no issues with him and Ezekiel Elliott.
Right.
So I've got one more question for you, Galkin, before we let you go. Every beat writer, unfortunately, can't take a day off because this Oral Thomas to Dallas thing has lingered. I've been doing this before you got here on the Oral Thomas storyline, and quite frankly, it's exhausting. I've joked it's sort of the never-ending story. You've got just as many sources in the building as I do. Can you put this to bed for the fans? In other words, the Oral Thomas interest is there or it isn't?
Well, the Cowboys had interest. There was initial interest. I think anytime a 7-time Pro Bowler becomes available at your greatest position of need, you're going to talk about it. The issue, of course, with Earl Thomas, I think it's probably twofold. One, is he a true 7-time Pro Bowler in form in terms of, is that what you're going to get? A guy who's today a Pro Bowler and whatever that's worth, I realize, set aside Pro Bowl voting. But number two, the Baltimore Ravens and the Seattle Seahawks are two of the finest run organizations in football. From a personnel department standpoint, you'd be hard pressed to find two more respected front offices than those. Seahawks had him while he was playing at an elite level. And at some point along the way decided, it's time to part ways. Baltimore Ravens pick him up, take a look at, again, skill set, and then maybe the other part of what a player is in terms of in your locker room and your building, decide this isn't worth keeping on our club, and they move in a different direction. In very tight intervals, both those organizations move on. So Cowboys see that Earl Thomas becomes available. I mean, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to vet a player. They're going to do research. They're going to make phone calls, and they're going to get an idea of what exactly they'd be getting by bringing Earl Thomas into their building. What followed was silence. Silence in terms of contract discussions, silence in terms of making an effort to bring Earl Thomas to Dallas. I think that silence should be as telling as anything I could say or you, Jane, could say about where the Cowboys stand today on Earl Thomas. I mean, you wanted to be an optimist and think it's going to happen. You always, veteran sign them after week one, their salary doesn't come guaranteed and all that, but I just don't think that applies here.
With that being said, one other layer, I was talking to a Ravens source today, and that organization has not had any contact with anybody from the Cowboys inquiring about Earl Thomas. In other words, there has been no vetting or even discussions about that particular player, which I thought was interesting and should also speak to, they're going to do their due diligence. Someone would have picked up the phone. That phone is not ring about that particular player.
Any research they need to do now, they can just ask Brandon Carr, who stood next to him in the defensive backfield last
week. Well, and Galkin, before we let you go, I lied to you. Just listening to Brandon talk today, and I had even talked to the Ravens about Carr, and they said that this is a willing tackler. They think that he's better. I think it was, what, free safety is what they thought that he was a little bit more natural at, that he made that transition. Let me see if I can't pull that up. That he made that transition. Well, great deep safety. They think he'd be great working against the tight ends. And then when I talked to the Cowboys, they noted all of these positions that he can play along the field. How quick do you think it is before we see him move up from the veteran practice squad? And how easy is that given this new system?
Yeah, so it helped that he had his free agent workouts. So he was able to start the COVID testing. And so he'll be able to have a full practice week. It's not like where Randy Gregory was there. Became cleared on Monday. He was able to begin COVID testing. Like, he wouldn't be eligible to be with the Cowboys at practice if he could practice on Wednesday. You know, that's not something Randy Gregory could do, but that's something that Brandon Carr can do. So he's got a bit of a leg up in terms of just getting ready for a Sunday game. If you think to how NFL training camps, though, this season have been structured, there's been a lengthy strength and conditioning acclimation period where even if, as Brandon Carr has said, I've been training all off season. That's fine. A lot of players have been training all offseason, but yet the NFL Players Association found it prudent for anyone to start training camp to have like a more gradual acclimation. And so, the Cowboys had a program for Dontari Poe when coming off of PUP. They had a program for Everson Griffin after they signed him. They were easing these guys along in practice, just doing individual drills or just doing strength and conditioning before they actually had them do team drills, much less learn a playbook and communicate in the back end of a defense, against a team that likes to pass as much as the Ravens do, or as the Rams do. So I would be a little surprised if we saw them, say, start on Sunday. Maybe they would call him up from the practice squad. You can do that with two guys. But I also wouldn't be surprised at all if he's not active at all for at least the time being. His time of doubt is coming. He's going to be a big part of this defense.
All right. Well, Michael, we appreciate you joining us today. Everybody, as I told you, you can go follow him on Twitter at Gehlken NFL. Jane, I won't ask you to spell Gehlken. It's Gehlken. I've learned where that H goes. That's always the trickiest part of it, but I've learned where the H goes. So that's where you can follow him. Michael, we appreciate you, man.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, we got a lot coming up this week for the Cowboys. Of course, week one, first game, and we'll be back with another episode this week. We still got to preview the Rams. We didn't even get into so much of what we could have discussed already. We got to preview the Rams. We got to talk about how Deshaun Watson's contract now impacts Dak, which Jerry Jones acknowledged this week on Dallas Radio. So still lots to talk about, but it feels good that football is once again on the horizon, and we'll talk to you again later this week.